The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor, a professional writer, and a priest of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. His website is rusjournal.com. That's rusjournal.com. Now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday, March 31st, 2010, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth Podcast, heard on this fine podcasting network, theuglytruth.podbean.com. Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. As I said, it is Wednesday, and what that means is we are joined by our very good friend, war hero, comrade-in-arms, Phil Turney, survivor of Israel's premeditated and deliberate attack upon his ship, the USS Liberty, 34 years ago this upcoming June the 8th. Phil Turney, are you with us?
I am, Mark. Good morning, and it's nice to be back with you on The Ugly Truth, and it sounds like we just got one heck of a guest here that's going to enlighten us on what's going on in the past couple days in Russia.
Absolutely, yes. We'll keep him a mystery here for just a few more seconds, ladies and gentlemen. As Phil mentioned, the topic of discussion today is going to be Russia. And, ladies and gentlemen, we should not make the mistake of thinking that what happens in Russia is not important. Because, as Phil knows, being a survivor of the USS Liberty, and more importantly, a survivor of Israel's attack on the USS Liberty, Russia played a central role in this whole thing. Because if you have bothered to read the book Operation Cyanide by investigative journalist Peter Hunnam, and if you will read Phil's upcoming book, What I Saw That Day, you will see that the United States came within 2 minutes of dropping nuclear weapons on Cairo, which was the Soviet Union's biggest ally in the Middle East at that time. And had the United States... I back up a second. Had the USS Liberty sunk, as had been intended, and had the United States dropped those nuclear weapons on Cairo, as they had planned on doing, it is very unlikely, ladies and gentlemen, that Russia would have just sat by and taken it on the chin and not done anything about it. Anyway, having said that, I'm going to turn the microphone over to my very good friend, Phil Turney, and I'm going to let him do his magic. Phil, take it away.
Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it. And I just want to say, ladies and gentlemen, this terrible, terrible sneak attack on the Russian people comes to me in the form of the USS Liberty, what happened to us in a sneak attack by cowards carrying bombs to destroy other human beings. It's just unfathomable. But Mark and I... We started this show in memory of the crew and the dead of the USS Liberty, and that goal has not waned one bit. We're hitting the internet, the phones, the talking circuits. We're going to be all over the country selling and encouraging people to learn more about what happens, in this country and why it happens. And so with the book coming out, what I saw that day, as Mark mentioned, it is, as far as I'm concerned, it's one of the most in-depth books written on the USS Liberty, and that's our goal, is to get the truth out to the people. So I understand that, you know, the Russian government is not real happy and is sending out a lot of messages that they will get even. And I just got a feeling that they will get even with these people. It's just a shame that the United States government wouldn't come to the aid of helpless men on the high seas being slaughtered by our only ally in that area. Well, in the whole area is the little state of Israel that did the attacking, the murdering, and the cover-up, along with the United States of America. Let's not forget those who died that day. Let's not forget those who are dying right now in two stupid wars, all for the sake of Israel. And let's certainly not forget those people, those poor people in Russia that have just been blown to bits and destroyed their lives, their families. My heart goes out to him, and I hope everybody else would say a prayer for him, because I sure am. It's just a crying shame that we have things like this happen. But as Mark said, there's more to this than the eye sometimes sees.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody, let's listen, and let's stop Mark taking over, and we'll get on with the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you, Phil, for that very capable introduction on your part. Ladies and gentlemen, this thing that just took place, the fact of the matter is that when anything happens in Russia, we need to pay attention to it, okay, for the simple reason that it is a large, sovereign, nuclear-armed country. And particularly when we have something like this happening, two bombs going off during rush hour in Russia's capital city of Moscow that kills, last count, I think, is 39 people. And it is blamed on, surprise, surprise, Islamic terrorists, okay? We have to pay close attention to this. Now, it would be nice, ladies and gentlemen, it would be nice if we lived in the kind of world, the kind of idyllic world, where you could believe what the media told you, you could believe what governments around the world told you, but the fact of the matter is that we don't live in that kind of world. We live in a kind of world where Al Capone and his gang, in some fashion, run every government, and I don't mean Al Capone, literally, ladies and gentlemen. What I'm talking about here is people with a mafia mindset, okay, who don't operate on the up and up. They don't live by the norms of civilized society like the rest of us tried to, like the rest of us try to do. So we have to pay attention to these, and we have to look beyond the picture that the mainstream media, or what I would consider the media government complex, paints for us. Now, with regards to this situation, we're talking about Russia, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on this, despite the fact that I am extremely interested in all things Russian. And so, to have this discussion today, there's only one person I feel capable to bring on the air, and that is Dr. Matt Raphael Johnson, who runs the website RusJournal.com. Dr. Johnson, thank you for coming on, and particularly coming on such short notice.
Well, it's no problem, Mark, at all. I want to say that I was extremely happy to hear what Phil Turney had to say, and I have every intention of promoting what I saw that day as soon as it comes out. So I've actually never spoken to an actual Liberty survivor before, so this is a first for me.
Dr. Johnson, so far the reports are that 39 people have been killed on the subway system in Moscow, and Russia's Internal Security Service, the FSB, is saying that it was Chechen rebels. Now, we've got as much time as you have, so you basically have a very long leash to go as far as you want with this discussion. Why don't you tell the people listening whether or not you believe, indeed, this was Chechen rebels, as we are told that it was. And if you do not believe that this is the case, who do you think did it? Who had the motive to do it, and why?
Okay, well, that's a very long leash, and that's a very big question. I think maybe your listeners want me to say that the Jews did it, but I'm not absolutely certain. I want to say, first of all, that I have absolutely no reason to believe that the Chechens did not do it, specifically the movement run by Doka Umarov, who runs an army of about maybe 800 people in the Caucasus, who is a relatively mysterious figure, who has threatened Russian cities in the past. I have no reason to think that he didn't do it. He certainly had the motive, and he probably had the means.
Okay.
I want to say, most importantly, that Israel had nothing to gain by attacking the, or at the very least, you know, financing or assisting in the attacking of the Russian subway system.
Okay.
The fact is that Vladimir Putin and the Israeli government are largely opponents, that Putin's popularity has, to at least some extent, come at the expense of Israel and Zionism,
mm-hmm.
that the Jewry in general throughout the world is extremely hostile to, usually to all things Russian and Slavic,
mm-hmm.
and certainly to anything having to do with Vladimir Putin, and they've attacked him everywhere from Time magazine to the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be noted that the Carnegie Institute, Time magazine, the New York Times, Newsweek, Rockefeller Foundation, all of these groups have officially, over the last decade, come out against Russia's military effort in the Caucasus, specifically over Chechnya.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian oligarchs, specifically Berezovsky and Guzinski, have fully admitted their financing of the Chechen rebels to a great extent in one group or another,
mm-hmm.
and they are the ones who largely have fabricated the so-called human rights abuses of the Russian government. Both of those men are Jewish. Both of those men have Israeli citizenship. At the same time, the Israeli government has more or less been supportive of the Chechen movement. And I want to make it clear that we're all anti-Zionists here. Most of our listeners are anti-Zionists. I want to make it clear that Jewish-Islamic relations from the foundation of Islam to the foundation of Israel in 1948 have been nothing but cordial.
Mm-hmm.
Judaism has been pro-Islam throughout the existence of Islam. The only time you have these people turning on Islamic movements is when they affect Jews, and that starts in 1948, of
right,
course.
Right.
So the problem is, wherever Islamic movements have developed that have not threatened Jews,
mm-hmm.
and I want to say off the top of my head, Kosovo and Bosnia,
right.
On the one hand, and Chechnya on the other,
right.
the Israeli government and world Jewry have, for the most part, supported it.
Yes.
And you have, you know, amongst anti-Zionists, this idea that Islam can do no wrong, and that's certainly not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Long before Israel came into existence, Islam has been waging war against Greek and Russian Orthodox Christianity constantly and consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first heard about these attacks, I had remembered the threat of Doka Umarov, and that this is part of an ongoing war against the Orthodox world that both Judaism and Islam have been waging for a very long period of time. So I don't see anything here that Israel will gain. Because what will come out of these bombings is that Putin will increase in popularity. Because remember, his initial political capital, his popularity comes from his successful prosecution of the Chechen War. He will become more popular. Russian nationalism will continue to develop with a particularly anti-Islamic as well as anti-Judaic tone.
Mm-hmm.
And it has absolutely nothing to do with Iran, largely because Iran has refused to support the Chechen cause for a whole bunch of reasons. We can talk about those reasons if you want. I mean, partially because this movement is largely secular.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly Sunni.
Mm-hmm.
And the Iranian government is pro-Russian, and the Russian government is pro-Iranian.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely nothing here to link Iran. So I don't see what Israel gains, what the U.S. gains here whatsoever. Oh, I also want to mention, too, on the same topic, just before you called me, I was reading the Jerusalem Post, and I was reading Netanyahu's condolence letter to the Russians, And I started to chuckle because I realized that it really had nothing to do with the Russians. Netanyahu says, yes, it's terrible that all the Russians were killed, but, you know, Jews are killed every day by these Islamic terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So he writes this letter to Russia basically talking about himself and Israel. So it's a backhanded a condolence letter.
Right.
Which is, you know, very, very typical. You know, who cares if the dumb goyim are killed?
Right.
There was one Israeli who was slightly wounded in the bombing. Otherwise, no Israelis were, or Jews of any kind, as far as I know, have been involved. So, you know, this is something that this particular Chechen group has been threatening for a long time. It's a fairly low level, very non-Mossad type of operation. These two women, according to the FSB, at least so far, just had very crude explosive belts. They had TNT and some pieces of metal to be used as shrapnel. It's pretty crude, actually, as far as these things go. Nothing as to what Mossad or FSB could really pull off if they really wanted to. But again, I'm not saying that Israel is uninvolved in Chechnya. Israel has been very closely involved in supporting and financing, both nationally and internationally, the Chechen revolutionary movement, whether it be secular or Islamic.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to give the impression that Israel somehow is opposed to all of this. They are not. In fact, it's very rare that Israel opposes an Islamic movement, so long as that movement is outside of the Middle East.
Exactly. And then sometimes even within the Middle East, such as with the creation of Hamas.
Right, yeah, and I've read quite a bit on the Mossad connection there, although, if you remember, Putin got a lot of heat for recognizing the elections in the West Bank and supporting the Palestinian government that came to power there, which was, for the most part, a Hamas-based based government. I mean, as weak as it is, at the very least, it's elected. And so let's make it clear that Russian and Israeli interests are vehemently opposed.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians condemned the invasion of Iraq. The Russians have condemned all threats against Iran. And really the big clincher here is that the Russian government, Russian private industry, especially oil, natural gas, as well as metals, precious metals, and strategic metals, are heavily invested in Iran. The fact is that the two governments are very closely bound, and Russia is vehemently opposed to any intervention in Iranian affairs by the West, especially by the Israelis.
If we could just back up here just a second, Doctor. You mentioned Israel supporting these breakaway groups. I don't know if we want to call it a breakaway group, but groups such as the Chechnyans and whatnot. What interest does Israel have in supporting, even though, as you said, you know, it is largely secular, nevertheless, they are an Islamic culture, an Islamic society. What interest does Israel have in supporting these groups such as the ones in Chechnya who are fighting for their autonomy?
Well, that's a difficult question, partially because the Chechens themselves are so deeply divided as to what they want and the nature of how they're to get it. Most of the pro-Russian Chechens were expelled from the country around the time of the breakup of the Soviet Union. But even then, the Iranians refused to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
The primary interest that the Israelis have is to eliminate as much as they possibly can Russian influence over anything in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The other interest that they have is a little bit more subtle, and I've spoken about this before, I've written about this before, and that is keeping this drug and prostitution Silk Road, so to speak, open from Central Asia up through the Caucasus, including Chechnya,
mm-hmm.
And the Pontski Gorge in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
These areas are loaded with MI6, CIA, and Mossad.
Mm-hmm.
The Pontski Gorge in Georgia, which is an Israeli client state, is one of the places where the Chechen rebels have fled when Tetchen was finally pacified, almost a decade ago now. And so they want to keep the flow of those goods open, and they want to make sure that American and Israeli oil firms and investors in the pipelines don't have to compete with Russia, who really is the largest potential producer in the world in terms of oil and natural gas.
Sure.
And this kind of competition is simply out of the question for the Israelis. I want to mention, and I do think this is significant, that the head of, I guess, the most militant Chechen rebel group, Doka Umarov, is a graduate of the old Soviet Caucasus Oil Institute, which is a university that gives degrees in pipeline technology and refining and how to find oil underground and all the technology that goes into this.
Mm-hmm.
So Umarov is actually trained in the oil industry. There was a time where he was connected to the old Soviet oil industry. And I think that's highly significant because it makes him a very attractive person to invest in.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that big oil was invested in the Chechen movement, partially because the Chechens were blowing up, they don't do this much anymore, but they used to do it a few years ago, blowing up Russian-owned oil pipelines, mm-hmm. and yet their men were seen guarding the pipelines of non-Russian owned refineries and pipelines and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So again, oil is a major issue here, and the American-Israeli pipeline interests are in direct competition with the Russian pipeline interests, and that also would include Iran and China and to some extent India,
mm-hmm.
And their investments in Russian oil as well. So if anything, to the extent that Mossad knew about this, to the extent that Mossad may have helped these bombers, the only thing that they could have gained has nothing to do with Iran, nothing to do with any wars in Central Asia. It's revenge. It's we hate the fact that Tehran and Moscow are essentially an axis, mm-hmm. that they are allied, and we want to support the Chechen cause to help disrupt this alliance, because we know that the Iranians are opposed to the Chechens. They have never supported the Chechens. If anything, they have been overtly hostile to the Chechens on religious grounds and also on political grounds.
Don't go away, because there's more to come on The Orthodox Nationalist. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. Let's return to The Orthodox Nationalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
Doctor, there's a couple things that I wanted to ask you, and I'm fascinated by just what you've been talking about. But first, the Iranians and the Russians, in my view, them being close allies, and Putin promises to finish that nuclear facility that they're working on, is, I think, quite possibly stop a third war going on right now between the U.S. and Iran, with of course Iraq and Afghanistan. And my other question is the letter that Benjamin Netanyahu was writing to Putin, I believe you said, it sounds like the letter was, hey, listen, you know, I feel sorry for you, but you should feel more sorry for us. And thirdly, when you say 1948, of course, the creation of Israel, which I think is one of the biggest mistakes made, they gave them a match, and it started a brush fire. Now they got several hundred nuclear weapons, a nuclear superpower in that part of the country, and they're the only ones. And it's frightening that all this war, all this blowing people up, everything going on, but don't you, or do you agree if in 1948, if it never happened, the problems in the world would be less?
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything that you just said there. I think that the Israelis have caused more trouble, than probably any other single country, certainly in the Middle East. It is an absolute disaster, and you're absolutely right to talk about their nuclear weaponry as well as their biological weaponry. They are an immensely disruptive force in world politics, and I don't see how the U.S. would have had substantial enemies in the Middle East had it not been for American support of the Zionist interests. I mean, remember, after World War II, the U.S. was seen as an anti-colonial force. And with the support of Israel in the Middle East, the U.S. was then seen as a supporter of colonialism, in this case, Jewish domination through Rothschild money of much of the military situation in the Middle East. Yeah, as far as Netanyahu's letter, I think you're right. I think this is just narcissism. Feel more sorry for us. You know, the Jews are the only ones who are worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that you mentioned, you are absolutely correct to bring it up, and I don't think a lot of people are cognizant of this. The reason that, or one of the reasons that the U.S. is so hesitant in the Iranian situation is it would completely alienate Russia. It would definitely alienate China. And those are two enemies who largely are allies as well. Both Iran and Russia are supplying China with oil. And those pipelines, of course, are also very much a part of the Chechen conflict, especially Russia to China. And how many Russian scientists and Russian military personnel are in Iran right now is probably classified, but I suggest that it's probably substantial.
Mm-hmm.
And so any attack on Iran would mean the death of the Russian scientific elite in that country. And I want to say that when Yeltsin was president of Russia, and he couldn't afford to pay these nuclear scientists, the main destination for these guys to go get jobs was either China or Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely have Russian nuclear scientists working in Iran right now, and they're working on this project. And the Russian government, to some extent, is heavily invested in that whole economy. So it's considered a Russian sphere of influence, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anything that Phil said is off the mark there. It all makes perfect sense, and so I think we're at 100% in full agreement. And as always, no matter where in the world we're talking about in terms of our political economy and military affairs, Israel always seems to end up in the picture. It's really amazing. It really is frightening.
Well, Doctor, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I have to slightly and politely disagree with you on something. Now, backing up to what you said concerning the whole Chechen movement, and the fact that Israel is heavily invested in this. It's been my experience as a kind of a hack news analyst, okay, that whenever anything blows up anywhere, and it can be blamed on Islamic extremists, whether it's a movement that Israel has supported or not, the fact of the matter is that Israel benefits from it. There's no question about the fact, in my mind, that Israel is... The number one game right now is this clash of civilizations, right, between what we would call the Christian West and the Muslim Middle East, which obviously would include, Muslims anywhere. So, this bomb going off in this Moscow subway, station, killing all these people and having it blamed on Chechen, terrorists, This definitely works in Israel's favor. I don't think that you would disagree with me on that. I think that where we have a minor disagreement is whether or not Israel would have an interest in actually helping bring something like this about. Now, as luck would have it, I have begun reading now for probably the third or fourth time Viktor Strofsky's first book. Those of you out there who do not recognize the name Viktor Strofsky, he was a Mossad agent for about half a dozen years, about 20 years ago. And reading this book, this firsthand account of his years in the Mossad, of course we have to leave open the possibility that a lot of this is to a certain degree bravado or whatever. I'm not saying it is, I'm not saying it isn't. But one of the things that is patently obvious in reading this book is that Israel, they have eyes and ears everywhere. Now, with regards to the Chechens, if indeed there was this operation that was being planned to blow up, to have these two female suicide bombers detonate these bombs in this subway, Israel had to have some idea that this was happening, that this was getting ready to take place. I remember reading a story the other night about how Israel knew that the Palestinians in southern Lebanon were getting ready to launch an attack because a shipment of high-quality beef had been delivered to the refugee camps. And based upon this one piece of information all by itself, the fact that there was high-quality beef that was being shipped to the refugee camp, they deduced that an attack was upcoming. Because, you know, if you're going to devote your scant resources into buying high-quality beef, and a lot of it, what that means is that they're getting ready to have a party, a celebration party, before they go and launch this attack. So I think that Israel more than likely knew that this bombing was going to take place, just as she knew 9/11 was going to take place, and that it works in her interest to see this thing taking place because, first of all, as far as Russia and Iran go, okay, Israel needs to pry these two people, these two entities apart as much as possible because, as you have pointed out, Russia is the sole reason right now that the United States and Israel have not launched this attack against Iran. So how do you pry them apart? If you can't induce them through diplomatic means, as they've been doing, trying to bully Lavrov and Medvedev and others, how do you do it? Well, you blow something up in Russia so that the people, once it's blamed on these quote-unquote Islamic terrorists, all of a sudden, the Russian people, in a very shocked and the shocked and confused state that they're in, then they're breathing down Putin's neck, saying, "What are you doing, getting cozy with all these Muslims?" I mean, think back to 9/11. These towers come down, and then the next thing we know, we're going to war against Iraq, a country that didn't have anything to do with it. So all of this criteria that we're discussing, the fact that Iran is Shia and the Chechens are Sunni, and that they never got along, to the average Russian who's really ticked off that this thing took place, it isn't going to make any difference. The heat's going to come down on the Russian government to cool ties with Iran and to not do business with these Muslims because look what they just did to us in the subway.
Okay, well, a few things here. Number one, I've written and spoken, as well as with you personally, as well as my own radio show, mm-hmm. that Israel is heavily involved in Chechnya and in Chechen refugee camps in Georgia and elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So I have no question that Israel knew. There's no question that Israel may have even have been a part of it through its intelligence agencies in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different thing from saying that they gain something from it.
Okay.
The other concept is that, you know, this isn't the first time this has happened in the Russian case. There was another Chechen group, that took responsibility for, blowing up the Beslan school a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
which killed mostly children. The hostages that survived did mention that they saw a man without a mask that looked just like Doka Umarov. Amongst the places before Umarov took over,
mm-hmm.
Amongst the fighters that were initially at the Beslan massacre, as well as the apartment bombings and other things like that, and this didn't in any way harm the relations with the Islamic world, whether in the Middle East or in Central Asia. I'm just not sure whether or not the average Russian will automatically lump Tehran and in this case, a relatively eccentric Chechen group in the same organization and in the same movement. You may be onto something, you may not be. I have the feeling that Russians are a bit more knowledgeable about this part of the world than Americans. Americans don't know anything about it. Russians, because they border that area, probably know a little bit more. Russian-Iranian relations have been warm for a very long period of time. They've been warm all throughout the Chechen battles. I mean, what, 10,000 Russians were killed in Chechnya. None of that affected the relations with Iran. If anything, more and more investment money went into Iran. And if anything, an educated Russian nationalist may even consider that Iran could be used as a counterweight against this very strange, this very fragmented Chechen and Caucasian Islamic movement in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just not sure. This is such an indirect way
mm-hmm.
of trying to break that alliance, an alliance that survived far worse than this bombing of the subway. I understand what you're saying. There may be some truth to it, but if that is the reason behind this bombing, it's very poorly thought out.
I see.
And as far as I know, the Iranians have equally said that this bombing is outrageous. This is not what Islam is,
mm-hmm.
and all this other stuff. The one thing that you do have going for you, as far as that argument goes, and I'm sure a lot of people are making it now, is that the Chechen movement has been slowly but surely Islamicized over the years. In 95, it was completely secular.
Mm-hmm.
2008, 2009, have a lot of foreign troops, Mujahideen, throughout the Islamic world, now going to Chechnya. A lot of these people have been from Bosnia. A lot of these people have been, from all over the Islamic world, even as far east as Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a controversy among Chechen nationalists as to whether or not these foreign fighters are a good thing.
I see.
So on the one hand, they say, well, it's good to have more numbers and they have a lot of experience. On the other hand, we can't control them. We don't know what they really want. They're not really Chechens. They have their own agenda. Maybe they're working for foreign governments. We don't know what the deal is.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, even if you're right 100%, Mark, it's not going to affect the alliance between Moscow and Iran. And I'm willing to say that both Russian and the Armenians are very important here because they're almost completely surrounded by Islam.
Mm-hmm.
That both Russia and remember, Armenia is also very close with Iran as well, mm-hmm. the oil and the natural gas area. If anything, Iran is going to be seen as a counterweight to some of the more radical groups that have taken up root in the Caucasus.
I see.
So I don't think it's going to have any effect on that alliance whatsoever.
So do you still see the delivery of the S-300 anti-missile system to Iran as promised?
Yeah, well, that particular missile system, this is nothing new. This is one of a lot of scientific weapon systems that has been delivered not just to Iran, but also to their main ally in Damascus as well.
Mm-hmm. I read an interesting story yesterday, Dr. Johnson, about Georgia and the fact that NATO, the story that I read, I believe it was in Haaretz, it was said something along the lines that NATO wants to start rearming Georgia. Have you run across this story?
Yes. Yeah, but I think it's largely been stymied because of the new president of Ukraine's rejection of NATO.
Uh-huh.
Let me tell you the problem here.
Okay.
One of the biggest problems with NATO enlargement relative to these relatively poor countries is that to become a member of NATO, you have to spend a fortune
mm-hmm.
in modernizing your equipment. Not only modernizing your equipment, but standardizing your equipment
right.
with the NATO core members.
Exactly.
This means, and the real reason that the Ukrainian government, whether it be the old orange government or the blue government, doesn't matter. They don't have the money, even if they're dying to get into NATO, they don't have the money to completely remake their military forces.
Right.
If George is going to do this, they don't have enough money in their yearly budget to replace what they lost and then to standardize everything, and this also includes training techniques, and their officer corps has to be reviewed, everything has to be redone. There's simply not enough money in their budget for anything to do this with their military. If they really want to bring Georgia into this alliance, number one, it could start another war.
Right.
And number two, it would have to be financed entirely by NATO members, and frankly, I don't think they're willing to do that. So, but when Ukraine said, no, this isn't going to happen, their motivation is largely financial. We don't have the money to blow our nose. Never mind completely remake our military forces for the sake of joining an alliance that may or may not have tangible benefits to our people.
Wow. Well, Doctor, to say that that this program has flown by, boy, I've got a real bad habit these days of goofing up my past participles. The other day, I actually, on the air, used the word blued instead of blown.
Okay.
And, but I can blame it on the fact that I do have 9 kids running around the house, and most of the time I'm only half conscious anyway. To say that this has has flown by is an understatement. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see the developments that, that bear out in the next hours and days and weeks from this. But either way, I think we can assume that this is not going to be something that's going to go away very quickly. I mean, when you're talking about a loss of life like this, you know, it's something that, that sits with people for a very long time. Phil Turner, you've been semi-silent over there for a while. What do you have to say about this? What does your gut tell you about this whole thing, other than the obvious fact that it is a tragedy?
Well, Mark, first of all, I'd like to thank the doctor for coming on the, our show. You know, we always seem to get the best talent that's out there, the people that know exactly what's going on and are not afraid to voice their opinions. And I certainly am heartfelt about that. Thank you, sir, for coming on the show. I'd be happy to be back again. And what I think, Mark, about it, what's going on and what might happen, I can't give you a definitive answer. All I know is when I think about it, my heart starts to beat harder because I know something is going to happen.
Yep.
I just don't know what.
Well, at the very least,
false flag.
At the very least, Phil, I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but even if Israel were not at the center of this thing, she will use this thing to her advantage. She's going to get all of her mouthpieces in America and other places saying, see, we told you what these people are like, so keep sending little Johnny and little Joni off to fight these wars because these people, they're just out to destroy us. So I have no doubt about the fact, I mean, look, to pass up an opportunity like this would be like you're walking down the street and all of a sudden a bag of money falls out of the sky and lands right in front of you, and yet you're not going to pick it up and take it with you. So we can definitely count on the Israeli propaganda machine making the most of this in furthering this, as you put it, Phil. You know, somebody gave these people a box of matches in the middle of a very dry tinder area, and there's no way that they're going to that they're not going to make full use of this thing.
I agree, Mark.
I'm sorry.
That's something I absolutely agree with.
Yeah. So anyway, guys, as I said, we are at the end of the program. I cannot, like I said, this has got to be, I feel like I stepped into a time machine here because this is like the fastest 45 minutes that I've ever spent in my life. Doctor, if you would please give the folks listening the information that they need to get a hold of you and to read what I consider to be your must-read analysis and material.
Oh, well, I have my own radio show every week on the Voice of Reason Network, and of course we have some of your podcasts on there as well. My website is Rus Journal, Rus as in Russian, so it's RUSjournal.com. I have 4 books for sale, including one that just came out yesterday on Diapara Press, as well as a whole bunch of essays when I was working at the American Free Press and the Barnes Review. I've republished some of those and everything else. And if you go, I don't have my email address on that site, but on my radio program and the Voice of Reason, my email address is right on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I welcome any communication whatsoever with people who are interested in this topic and constructive criticism of whatever kind. So I really encourage that, and I usually respond to people within the hour. So.
Okay, Doctor, if you would hold on for just a second, I want to talk with you off the air. But for now, I'm going to hand the mic over to my good friend Phil Turney and have him close out today's program. Phil, please take it away.
Mark, I will do that. And thank you, Doctor, and thank you, Mark, for a great show. And ladies and gentlemen, let's not forget the brutal slaughter of my shipmates, your sons and daughters on the high seas by the government of Israel. That's what this show is all about, is to get the truth out about the liberty, about this, or that, or the other. And let's please pray for our fighting men and women in the wars that we should be in, Afghanistan and Iraq, and all for the benefit of Israel. And let's just hope that our government in Israel doesn't get funny and go into Yemen instead of Iran. It's an easier target, because I think I see that on the horizon. Maybe I'm just maybe a loony tune, but I think that they have to have more wars to get us deeper, deeper, deeper. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. God bless you. And we'll be with you in another 3 or 4 days.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Nationalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Tuned into Radio Aryeh.